So for centuries, right, long before anyone had even, conceived of an fMRI machine or a PET scan, people taking psychedelics all seemed to reach for the exact same phrase to describe what they were
Oh,
feeling.
yeah, the phrasing is incredibly consistent.
Right, from like ancient indigenous ceremonies passing down these oral traditions all the way to modern participants sitting in sterile clinical trials, the universal description is almost always it feels like a waking dream.
Yeah,
Like
exacto.
you get this absolute flood of vivid, complex imagery that just arrives totally unbidden, the sturdy rules of, time and space and logic completely bend.
And your emotions just swell way beyond their normal waking baseline.
Right. And that rigid sense of being a single bounded self starts to dissolve.
It is a ubiquitous comparison.
Yeah.
And that's precisely because the subjective experiences map onto each other almost flawlessly. I mean, anyone who has had a highly immersive, bizarre dream,
Which is pretty much everyone, right?
right? Anyone who's had that and also read a detailed account of, say, a high-dose psilocybin journey, they instantly recognize that the texture of those two states is incredibly similar.
It's like the bizarre is just accepted as normal.
Exactly. The impossible is experienced as profound.
Now, we used to think that was just poetry, right? Like a metaphor people use because it was just the best vocabulary available to describe something largely indescribable.
Sure, just a linguistic shortcut.
Yeah. There is this new paper published in the OTW Journal titled The Waking Dream, Psychedelics, Sleep, and REM that suggests this isn't a metaphor at all.
Might even a little bit.
It's like literal, measurable neuroscience. So, okay, let's unpack this. We're going to start with the physical architecture of the brain because the article argues that dreaming and the psychedelic state are built out of the exact same neural materials.
Which is wild.
Yeah.
But to understand the mechanics of this, we really have to look at what the brain is actually doing during a standard REM cycle.
Okay, so just normal dreaming.
Right, just normal, everyday dreaming. There was this landmark 2010 study by researchers Neer and Tononi, and they mapped the neurobiology of dreaming very clearly.
And what did they find?
Well, during REM sleep, the prefrontal regions of your brain go profoundly quiet.
The prefrontal cortex. That's the logical part, right?
Exactly. It's the area responsible for self-monitoring, executive control, directed thought, and most importantly, reality testing.
Reality testing.
Yeah, it's what tells you, hey, this doesn't make sense.
Okay.
And meanwhile, the limbic system, which processes raw emotion, and the visual cortices, which process imagery, those become highly active.
So it's like the brain strict bouncer, the prefrontal cortex, it just decides to take a coffee break.
That's a great way to put it.
And suddenly all the wild emotional and visual characters from the limbic system just completely flood the dance floor. There's no one checking IDs at the door anymore.
What's fascinating here is that this specific decoupling, the quiet prefrontal cortex and the hyperactive emotional and visual centers, it explains why both states feel so utterly uncritical.
Uncritical, meaning we just accept whatever happened.
Exactly. When you're dreaming, you might find yourself in a house you'd never seen before, having a conversation with a childhood pet who is somehow speaking English.
And you're just like, yeah, this seems fine.
Right. Your brain just accepts it as ground truth. The reality testing center is simply offline. So when neuroscientists began putting individuals under the influence of classical psychedelics into fMRI machines, they observed a strikingly similar neural profile.
So the scans looked like REM sleep.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
There's this massive relaxation of that top-down prefrontal control, coupled with a total liberation of the deeper emotion and image-generating parts of the brain.
So the ordinary sensor steps back.
The sensor steps back, and the mind's generative machinery runs completely free. So the subjective similarities, the warped time, the intense emotions, the dissolution of the ego, they're happening because it is fundamentally the same biological machinery driving both experiences.
Okay, so if a trip and a dream look nearly identical on a brain scan, we have to look at the chemical switches that actually turn these states on and off, right?
Right, which brings us to the neurochemistry.
And this brings us to serotonin. But based on the research in this paper, the neurochemistry presents a massive paradox.
Oh, the serotonin paradox. It is honestly one of the most brilliant puzzles in this entire field of research.
I mean, it completely broke my brain when I first read it.
It's complex. To understand it, we have to trace the shifting balance of brain chemicals during a normal night of sleep.
Okay, walk through it.
So when you drift off, your brain descends through lighter stages into deep, slow wave sleep. Then, roughly every 90 minutes or so, you climb back up into a REM cycle.
The dream cycle.
Exactly. Now, serotonin sits right at the control panel of these transitions. There's research, specifically a major 2011 study, demonstrating that the brain's main source of serotonin, the dorsal raft nucleus, fires at a very steady, rapid pace while you are awake and alert.
So when we're awake, serotonin is just constantly pumping out.
Right. But when you enter deep, slow-wave sleep, that firing slows down significantly. And then when you finally enter REM sleep, the serotonin neurons fall almost completely silent.
Okay, wait, let me isolate that point because it seems central to the whole paradox.
It is.
Serotonin is fundamentally a wakefulness chemical. When it's flowing through the brain, we are alert, our reality testing is online, and REM dreaming is actively suppressed. It acts as like a heavy brake on the dream state.
Yep, it's the brakes.
And when serotonin production goes quiet, the brake comes off and the REM machinery boots up.
Serotonin actively suppresses the dream state, yes. It is literally the chemical enforcement of waking reality.
Well, wait. Classical psychedelics like ayahuasca, psilocybin, LSD, these are serotonergic drugs.
They are.
They operate by flooding the serotonin system, specifically targeting and agonizing the 5-HT2A receptors, right?
They're the exact mechanism.
So wait, if serotonin is the exact chemical that stops REM sleep and keeps us anchored in waking reality, and psychedelics flood the serotonin system, why do psychedelics make you feel like you're dreaming? Shouldn't a substance that binds to serotonin receptors just make you feel incredibly rigidly awake? Like, shouldn't it lock the dream machinery down even harder?
I love this question. That is the exact contradiction that researchers set out to resolve in the mid-2000s, and the resolution is incredibly elegant.
How does it work?
Well, psychedelics do keep you awake. They do not switch the brain into biological sleep.
Okay.
When researchers administered serotonergic psychedelics to animal models, they saw exactly what serotonin's wakefulness role predicts. The animals experienced intense, prolonged wakefulness and a measurable, profound reduction in both REM and deep sleep during the drug's active window.
So the drug isn't forcing the brain into literal sleep at all?
Not at all. Instead, by selectively agonizing the 5-HT2A receptors, rather than universally activating all serotonin receptors the way your natural serotonin does, these compounds create an entirely novel third state of consciousness.
A third state?
Yes. The 5-HT2A activation chemically enforces wakefulness, meaning the user is conscious, their eyes are open, they're forming memories.
What?
But simultaneously, that specific receptor pathway alters the default mode network and quiets the prefrontal cortex, unlocking the neural conditions of REM inside a waking mind.
A waking dream.
Literally.
It's literally enforcing wakefulness through one pathway while neurologically unlocking the dream state through another. That completely reframes what a trip actually is on a biological level.
It's a physiological hybrid state.
But, okay, if a daytime psychedelic trip is effectively hijacking the REM machinery while we're fully conscious, what happens to the biological sleep debt?
Ah, the night shift.
Yeah, like when the drug clears the receptors and you actually close your eyes 12 hours later, does the brain try to claw back that missed REM sleep or does it do something else?
To answer that, we have to look at full polysomnography data from daytime clinical trials.
And polysomnography is like the gold standard for sleep studies, right?
Exactly. It tracks brain waves, eye movements, muscle tension, everything during sleep. The OOTW paper highlights this foundational 2008 study by Barbanoy and his colleagues.
Okay.
They brought healthy volunteers into a sleep lab and administered a daytime dose of ayahuasca, which is the Amazonian brew containing the powerful psychedelic DMT.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because ayahuasca is an intensely powerful central nervous system stimulant in many respects. I mean, the psychological experience can be incredibly demanding.
Very demanding. Exhausting, even.
You'd think an experience that profound would leave the central nervous system totally wired. It's wild to assume anything other than severe insomnia or just totally fragmented sleep that night.
Well, they tested that exact assumption by using amphetamines as a control against the ayahuasca.
Oh, wow. Amphetamines.
Yeah. And the results were completely counterintuitive. The daytime ayahuasca caused absolutely no delay in falling asleep that night.
Wait, really?
None. None. It didn't disrupt the maintenance of their sleep, and the volunteers subjectively rated their sleep quality as entirely unimpaired.
That's crazy.
But here is the kicker. The polysomnography revealed that the underlying architecture of that sleep had shifted radically. The ayahuasca significantly reduced the total amount of REM sleeps the volunteers experienced, and it vastly increased their deep, slow-wave sleep.
So it actually tilted their entire night's architecture toward deep, restorative, slow wave sleep without keeping them tossing and turning.
Exactly.
Why is that shift so significant? Like, what is the brain actually doing during slow wave sleep versus REM?
So slow wave sleep, which is characterized by these large synchronized delta waves on an EEG, is the brain's most restorative, physically healing phase.
It's like the deep cleaning cycle.
Literally. During this stage, the brain performs critical metabolic housekeeping. The glymphatic system opens up and physically flushes out the neurotoxic waste proteins that build up during your waking hours.
Oh, wow.
And even more importantly for our context, slow wave sleep is when physical memories are consolidated and synapses are recalibrated.
So the ayahuasca seemed to shift the brain away from the dreaming phase and pushed it heavily into the physical remodeling phase of sleep.
Exactly, because it had essentially just experienced the dreaming phase artificially while awake.
Now, is this unique to the specific chemical makeup of ayahuasca? Because, you know, it contains MAO inhibitors alongside DMT. Or is this like a universal feature of all classical psychedelics?
The evidence strongly points toward a universal feature. The paper cites a more recent 2020 study by Dudisova and her team that tracked daytime psilocybin use.
The magic mushrooms.
Right. And they found a strikingly similar physiological signature.
Really? Same sleep changes?
Very similar. The daytime psilocybin significantly lengthened REM latency.
Which is what exactly?
It's the amount of time it takes your brain to descend through the lighter stages of sleep and enter its very first REM cycle of the night. It delayed that onset considerably and showed a strong trend toward reducing overall REM duration.
And this is, again, without messing up their actual sleep quality.
Exactly. Without disrupting the overall continuity or subjective quality of the sleep.
So the brain is actively suppressing REM sleep after a daytime trip.
Suppressing REM and delaying its onset.
Yeah.
And to neuroscientists and pharmacologists, that specific combination is not a minor technical detail.
Why not?
It sets off immediate alarm bells because suppressing REM and lengthening REM latency is the precise, undeniable physiological fingerprint of classical clinical antidepressants.
Wait. Are you saying a single daytime dose of psilocybin leaves the exact same footprint on your nighttime sleep architecture as someone taking a daily SSRI?
The footprint is remarkably similar. SSRIs, MAOIs, tricyclic antidepressants, nearly all of them heavily suppress REM sleep.
I had no idea.
Yeah. For decades, psychiatrists have noticed that when depressed patients begin taking these medications, one of the very first physiological changes is a sharp drop in REM duration.
And do they know why?
Well, researchers have long hypothesized that this REM suppression is intricately bound up with how these medications actually lift mood and alleviate depressive symptoms. It possibly works by resetting the emotional tone of the brain.
The fact that we see this exact same REM suppression after a psychedelic session, I mean, that seems like a massive clue to the therapeutic mechanism.
It is a huge clue.
But earlier, you mentioned that the other side of this equation is the massive increase in deep, slow-wave sleep. How does that part factor into the healing process?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it requires us to completely change how we view the timeline of a psychedelic therapy session.
How so?
We already know from cellular research that psychedelics trigger a rapid burst of neuroplasticity. They encourage dendrites to grow and new neural connections to form during the acute phase of the drug.
Right, while you're actually tripping.
Exactly. But generating new connections isn't enough. They have to be solidified. And that is where slow-wave sleep becomes the hero of the story.
Because that's the remodeling phase.
Right. Deep slow-wave sleep is when the brain does the physical structural work of memory consolidation. It prunes away the synaptic connections that aren't needed and reinforces the brand new pathways that the daytime neuroplasticity just seeded.
Okay, so it's almost like your brain is a smartphone.
Sure, let's go with that.
The daytime psychedelic trip opens up a window of plasticity, which is essentially like downloading a massive, highly complex new software update from the cloud.
I like this analogy.
You are pulling in all these new emotional perspectives. You're breaking rigid old habits, forming novel neural pathways. But you can't actually run the new operating system yet.
Right. You have to restart the phone.
Exactly. It's the deep, slow wave sleep that night where the device actually reboots, runs the installation process in the dark, and hard codes the update into your physical memory so you can actually boot up and function with it the next day.
The biological hypothesis maps onto that almost perfectly. a compound that opens a window of heightened plasticity during the day and then actively shifts sleep architecture to promote the deep, slow-wave sleep required to consolidate that plasticity at night. I mean, it is effectively working the night shift just as hard as the day shift.
That is incredible.
The therapeutic arc of the medicine doesn't end when the visual hallucinations fade and the compound clears the bloodstream. The reshaping of the brain continues in the dark.
You know, that sleep architecture shift, the physical consolidation of those new patterns during slow-wave sleep, could that be the actual biological mechanism behind the famous afterglow effect?
It's highly likely.
Because people often report this lingering sense of profound openness, psychological flexibility, and just peace for days, weeks, or even months after a session. It's not just a lingering chemical high in their system. Their brain literally, structurally rewired itself overnight.
The altered sleep is part of the therapy. It is the consolidation phase of the intervention.
Now, all of this sounds like a perfectly designed, miraculous mechanism, right? The daytime download, the nighttime installation.
It sounds great on paper.
Yeah. But we do need to look at the boundaries of this research, because it's so easy to take early neuroscience and just turn it into a sweeping biological law.
It is essential to maintain scientific rigor here. The picture painted by these overlapping studies is genuinely intriguing, but it has to be held very lightly.
Why is that?
First off, we are looking at small sample sizes. These sleep architecture studies were conducted on healthy, carefully screened volunteers. They were not conducted on clinical populations currently suffering from severe depression, PTSD, or trauma.
Which could make a huge difference.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. A healthy brain sleep response to a serotonergic compound might differ significantly from a clinically depressed brain's response.
Right.
Furthermore, these trials were strictly testing daytime dosing.
Right, daytime only. So what does this all mean? For anyone listening who is currently struggling with severe insomnia or disrupted sleep patterns, this is absolutely not permission to go self-medicate or microdose psilocybin right before bed.
Definitely not.
This research is about understanding the fundamental underlying machinery of consciousness, not finding a quick biohack for better sleep.
Taking a serotonergic psychedelic close to bedtime would almost certainly be disastrous for your sleep cycle.
Because of the wakefulness thing.
Exactly. Given serotonin's powerful evolutionary role in promoting wakefulness, as we discussed with the dorsal rife nucleus, taking these compounds at night would trigger intense central nervous system arousal.
So you'd just be wide awake.
Wide awake. It would enforce wakefulness, completely disrupt your circadian rhythm, and prevent that restorative slow-wave sleep we just highlighted.
Yeah, that sounds awful.
It's biologically counterproductive and, of course, in most jurisdictions, operating completely outside of legal and clinical boundaries.
Right. And we also have to acknowledge that individual neurochemistry varies wildly, right? The polysomnography data shows a statistical trend toward reduced REM and increased slow-wave sleep across the cohorts.
Averages, yes.
But anecdotally, if you talk to people after clinical trials, the spectrum of experiences is massive. I mean, some participants report having no dreams at all for a week.
While others report the exact opposite.
Right. Others say their dreams become intensely vivid, lucid, or even highly disturbed for a few nights while the brain recalibrates.
This raises an important question about how we interpret the frontier of neuroscience. We cannot confuse a fascinating biological correlation with a definitively proven clinical cause.
Meaning?
We've established that the sleep architecture changes. We know classical antidepressants cause a similar REM suppression. But we do not yet know for an absolute certainty that these specific nighttime sleep changes are the direct, isolated biological cause of clinical healing in depressed patients.
That's a hypothesis.
Exactly. The causal chain is compelling, but the missing links are still being researched.
We also need to be precise about the central concept of the waking dream, I think. Stating that a trip is neurologically parallel to a dream is incredibly useful for understanding the shared machinery, you know, the offline prefrontal cortex and the hyperactive limbic system.
Yeah, right, and the hard one.
But a psychedelic state is not literally biological sleep. I mean, a person under the influence of psilocybin is conscious. They are forming long-term memories of the experience.
Yes, and they can reflect on the bizarre imagery in real time. They retain a sense of autobiographical continuity that a dreamer simply doesn't have.
Right. When I'm dreaming, I don't know, I'm me lying in my bed.
Exactly. The scientific value of the comparison is that it points to shared anatomical hardware, not identical subjective states. The honest position right now is one of fascinated caution.
Fascinated caution. I like that.
We have real, measurable data from controlled studies showing that the brain utilizes the same visual and emotional circuits for both experiences, and that day tripping heavily influences night sleeping. These findings open up massive questions about consciousness that we are just beginning to build the tools to answer.
The sheer complexity of it is just staggering. I mean, we started today by looking at how the brain's reality testing center shuts down while the emotional centers light up.
Linking the ancient anecdotal comparison to modern fMRI data.
Yeah. And then we explored the serotonin paradox, discovering how a wakefulness chemical can literally create a novel third state of consciousness.
The waking dream.
And finally, we detail the physiological aftermath, how the brain suppresses REM sleep and boosts slow wave sleep to structurally install the neural changes that were seeded during the day.
You know, if we step back and look at what all of this really means for the nature of the human mind, there is a deeply profound realization hiding in this data.
What's that?
Every single night, without any external compounds, your brain deliberately and systematically lets go of the waking world.
Just on its own.
Completely on its own. It intentionally shuts down its own reality testing engine, silences the prefrontal cortex, and willingly enters a state of vivid, chaotic, emotional, completely self-dissolving imagery.
It just dreams.
It dreams.
Yeah.
We culturally tend to think of the psychedelic experience as taking us somewhere entirely foreign, you know, somewhere fundamentally alien to human nature.
We go into outer space.
Right. But this research suggests the exact opposite. The biological hardware that generates these wild, impossible worlds and profound emotional landscapes is something you are already intimately tied to.
Because you do it every single night.
You do it every single night in the dark. The capability for profound altered states is already built into your default neurobiology. Psychedelics merely allow you to walk through that exact same door with your eyes open while keeping your memory intact.
Man, that completely flips the perspective. It's not about introducing an unnatural state into the brain. It is about accessing a highly natural built-in state of consciousness from a waking angle.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive today. Before you drift off tonight and that serotonin break finally releases to let the REM cycle boot up, take a moment to ponder the incredible capabilities of your own mind. The rigid, logical rules of our waking life keep us safe, but the murky, overlapping, dream-generating machinery inside your skull.
That's the fascinating part.
That is where the real magic happens. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.